Hello neighbours, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. It's Big Picture Day here at Fit to Eat. Yes, we're going to talk about food policy. But wait, don't turn off the radio yet. You'd think that a discussion of policy and programming would be dry and crinkly with age, right? Like Brussels sprouts left out in the fall sun. But no, this is a show about optimism, about the small victories that change the world, one carrot at a time. We just need to find policies that catch up to where we are.
Newfoundland and Labrador is rich with culture and rich with tradition, and so much of that culture and that tradition is connected to food in some way. It's exciting to see that there's an increasing number of people in this province that are working tirelessly to make positive change. But I've also, over the years, been hearing more and more and seeing more evidence of kids asking for healthy food.
Today, I'm speaking with the current executive director of Food First NL. It is a group you may already know. It has bushels of partners. Maybe you're one of them. This was an interview we did in the summer of 2018, so you'll notice a reference to the recent opening of the new location for the St. John's Farmers Market. Well, as this is broadcast, it's been around for a full year now. Like a fine wine, sometimes a good interview needs time to settle in. We meet in the Food First NL office off a busy street in St. John's. Pull up a chair. Join us.
Christy Jameson and Executive Director with Food First NL. It's a provincial nonprofit organization, and it works quite broadly to try to improve access to healthy, culturally appropriate, safe food for people across the entire province.
That sounds like a really easy thing to do,
oh,
right?
Oh, it's so simple, which is why, you know, I'm still working at it after 9 years in the role.
I think a lot of people have probably heard of Food First, and I don't know what they know about it, but you've been involved in many different projects. But when did the organization start?
So it's actually 20 years ago. The organization was founded in 1998 as the Food Security Network of Newfoundland and Labrador. It was really a group of dietitians, okay, nutritionists that came together and really saw a lot of issue around poverty and hunger and access to food from that issue area.
I think there's probably two or three people who think it's still called the Food Security Network of Newfoundland.
Do you think so?
I think so, because I hear people say, well, then there's that Food Security Network, and then there's Food First, like that they're two different organizations.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
We can set them straight.
We did do a year of Food First NL, previously the Food Security Network of Newfoundland and Labrador, to try to overcome that.
What kind of organizations do you work with, or what partners? You have so many different ones, but what are some of the partners that you work with on a regular basis?
It's interesting. We actually have this incredible network of stakeholders and partners and collaborators and friends, I would say, that we work with as an organization. To give you some sense of the size, you know, we often look at our newsletter as a way to sort of assess the size of our network. And currently we have over 3,500 people as part of our newsletter distribution list. So it's a big network that we're working within. Our partners and stakeholders, I think, you know, a number of years ago, we did a bit of a count to see the number of people that we're working with. And it's over, I think it's like over 200 bodies that we're working with. And so it's a real range. It's people within the public health sphere. It's people that are working with the university, researchers and academics. It's actual food producers and associations of food producers, whether that's folks like the Federation of Agriculture or small scale mixed producers throughout the province. We do a lot of work with municipalities and connections with folks like the municipalities of Newfoundland and Labrador, connect with people more involved in the recreation side, working with community centers or family resource centers, connecting more and more so with schools and helping schools in the work that they're doing relating to food quite broadly. Mm-hmm. And I'm missing many.
Yeah,
so it's an incredible range that we work with.
This is a really easy question to write, but it's impossible to answer. How would you define success in this field?
It's interesting. I mean, I often find that the work that we do, there isn't necessarily the clear end game. And it also depends on how we are defining the success or defining the win that we're having.
Yeah.
So some of them could be seen to some people as small scale wins, but to other, the people that are involved in it see it as a massive win. I always would think too that many of the successes that we've seen, the level of Food First's involvement really varies project to project, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so there's some incredible successes I would speak to about what's happened within the broader ecosystem of players.
Yeah. We've seen some changes in terms of food security in this province. What are some of those moments that you sat in a meeting and said, yes, we're getting somewhere on this?
Well, I think a big one happened this weekend, and mm-hmm. that would be the opening weekend for the St. John's Farmers Market. Like that is, mm-hmm. to me, a huge win for us in the, when I say us, I mean us as in all the players in mm-hmm. this broader food system mm-hmm. and ecosystem mm-hmm. of work here. And that is something that I personally have had previous involvement in, although I haven't been around the table in the past number of years. Mm-hmm. But it's exciting to see that there's an increasing number of people in this province that are working tirelessly to make positive change. And the launch of the new farmers market, I think, is an incredible success for all of us in this mm-hmm. province. So it's exciting to see things like that happen. I've also had moments where I've walked into a grocery store here in St. John's and seen a big sign about local produce mm-hmm. and actually naming where the food is coming from here in this province. And to me, I always see that as a big indication of success, because it's showing that we're seeing changes within the large systems that do exist. So those, to me, those two examples are actually really interesting to look at the same time, because it's, one is about creating new systems, mm-hmm. creating new ways for people to access local healthy food. And the other is about changing existing systems to ensure that when you go to the normal places where you go to buy food, that you have access to healthy local options when mm-hmm. you go to those spaces. Mm-hmm. So those two, I think, need to happen hand in hand. We need to see both of those types of changes happening within the food system. And I think those are both two exciting successes we've seen in the system at mm-hmm. large.
You often refer to the food system, and that's the continual part of the discourse of Food First, mm-hmm. you know, which is great because it is a system and involves many different players. But you've also lived that out when you have events that go on. You try to bring a wide variety of people together, and that involves a lot of communication, and it involves a lot of negotiation with different parts. Do you think that one of the keys for things like the farmers market or more local food being available is to build the trust and communication and collaboration among a wide variety of partners?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I mean, the work that we do at Food First is really, it really falls into three areas. Mm-hmm. We try to do a lot of work to raise public awareness, to get people thinking about and talking about and concerned about and then engaging in issues of food quite broadly. We try to raise public awareness about the food system very intentionally, yeah. the strengths of it, the challenges of it that we face in this province. And we do that as a way to spur engagement and action. The second kind of key area of work that we do is that we catalyze and support action. So that's sort of connected to the public awareness piece, but then we will work very closely with communities, whether that's through a community center or through a municipality, or work with those communities to support them in developing and implementing programs that help to overcome barriers to access that they're facing specifically locally. And then the last real area that our work falls in is within partnerships, and allow me some jargon here, some strategic alignment.
Just the one. That's okay.
Just one. But we know, especially in this province, it's so critical that we are finding ways to work well together with the other players that are actively pursuing similar goals and targets that we are trying to achieve as well. So all of the work that we do tries to build on and enhance and connect with the incredible work that's happening among many of the other players within the sphere. And yes, as you were asking, the sort of underlining mm-hmm. work of the organization is rooted in the concept of the food mm-hmm. system. As I said at the beginning, you know, all the work that we do is ultimately working to try to improve access to food. And what we've found over the years is that this concept of access is actually incredibly complex and complicated. Mm-hmm. And in order to ensure access, you have to be looking at that from a number of different perspectives. And so for us, we actually did a fair amount of work a number of years ago to define what we mean by the food system. For years, we would talk about access being incredibly dependent on a food system, but it took us time to sit down and think, okay, what does this actually entail? And so for us, when we talk about access, we're talking about production, commercial production, and that's, you know, fisheries as well as agriculture. We're talking about distribution, and we're talking about about the actual act of accessing food. So whether you're going to a grocery store and mm-hmm. buying food, mm-hmm. but for us, we also very much talk about the traditional ways that people access food, whether that's through hunting and fishing and gardening and berry picking mm-hmm. and participating in some of those traditional food ways. And then we also, when we think about access, we talk about the act of preparing meals, celebrating with mm-hmm. food and consuming mm-hmm. food together with family and friends. Mm-hmm. And then we also talk about the ultimate disposal of food mm-hmm. and food waste and food mm-hmm. packaging. So we did a lot of work to sort of define that. And what we have found is that the process of defining that food system has been really helpful in informing opportunity for action and where action can be taken along this system, as well as identifying who needs to be involved, who are the key people that need to be around the table when we're having conversations about food access.
Is there a piece of music that I should play underneath? Is there anything that ever you hum when you're at a meeting and talking about food security?
That is so funny. there's a guy here in St. John's, Dan Ficken, who does do some beautiful instrumental work, and we've actually used some of his music on some of our videos. So the All Around the Table videos have Dan Ficken's guitar in the background.
Food First NL with a tune called Calendula. I'm speaking with Christy Jameson, the executive director of Food First NL. We start off this section by talking about self-provisioning.
I think I've always been impressed with your literature that has included reference to self-provisioning, because if you look at official figures, they don't include that. There are other things that growing food does for an individual in terms of their relationship to food.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not just growing food. It's also going out and hunting and going out and fishing and going out berry picking. And that's actually that area of gardening and participating in those food ways. That's where we've seen the strongest way to connect within the recreation sector, because those activities are not just, I would say actually only a small part of them is about food provision. A lot of it is about connection to the land, mm-hmm. connection mm-hmm. to this place, and actually being physically active mm-hmm. and participating in incredibly healthy, from the widest definition of health, incredibly healthy activities. So there's so much benefit to people participating in those traditional mm-hmm. food ways, mm-hmm. and Newfoundland and Labrador is rich with culture and rich mm-hmm. with tradition mm-hmm. and so much of that culture and that tradition is connected to food in some way.
Sometimes you hear people say, well, the traditional diet is unhealthy.
And I think, well, I personally see many traditional foods as being like the whole traditional foods, mm-hmm. the cabbage from the garden and the carrots, the potatoes and the turnip from the garden combined with moose or caribou or, you know, depending on where you are in the province, char or cod or salmon or our muscles, and then connecting that with the berries, partridge berries and blueberries and baked apples. All of that can be pulled together into an incredibly nutritious diet. So, and I think that's, you know, we're seeing people taking traditional foods and thinking about new ways to prepare those traditional foods. And there's some incredible entrepreneurs across this province that are playing with those, thinking of new ways.
That leads us to that one of the other five, where you're talking about the preparation of food as a part of the food system. And two pieces on that. One is the traditional preparation, and you have a very interesting series that's available on the web that people can talk about that for a moment. But also your link with chefs and other food entrepreneurs or whatever who are using traditional foods in different ways. You want to talk about those two a little bit?
Yeah. So a big part, or one of the things that we've done over the years with Food First, has been we've acknowledged the fact that one of the biggest strengths that we have in terms of food and food access in the food system here are these traditional food ways. So it's easy, and you know this more than most people, I think, that when we look at the stats in terms of the food system, it's easy for it to become quite negative and heavy and daunting, and to feel you can feel very powerless within that. But when you start to look at this incredible strength that we do have in the traditional food ways, I think that gives all of us some power. It gives agency back to people that you can participate in the food system in a meaningful way simply by going out and picking some berries or starting a small garden. And so what we've done at Food First is acknowledge that as an incredible strength, an incredible asset for us in this province. And because of that strength that we have, we wanted to do work that would try to document that and preserve that and encourage the continuation of these traditional food ways for future generations. So one of the things that we've done to do that has been organizing interviews with seniors across the province to both hear about their stories, to hear about how they grew up and what food meant to them growing up, as well as to document the actual skills that they practice, whether that be how to bottle beets or whether that be about actually going out and cod fishing or cleaning a cod, or whether that be about making jam. So actually sitting down with a senior and recording that knowledge. So we've actually over the years developed two video series. The first one was called All Around the Table, and the second one was called SCOFF, which was an acronym for Senior Celebration of Food and Film, which we were very, very proud of when we came up with that in the office that day. And both of those have recorded, I think both of them were 8 videos. So we have a series of, I guess, 16 videos of seniors from across the province, again, sharing that knowledge.
And people can get that at foodfirstnl.
Yes, yeah. So if people go to foodfirstnl.ca, you'd be able to find those on there. Yeah. So yeah, so we've certainly done a fair amount of work to try to celebrate that. As an organization, we try to take an assets-based approach. So thinking about what are the strengths that we have that we can build upon.
What are the unique things about this province that give us opportunity to address food security? Can you think of other parts of our culture that are advantageous, really, to address food security issues? Instead of always thinking, oh, well, the climate's no good, or we're at the end of the ferry line, or something like that.
In terms of just the uniqueness of this place, I think Newfoundland and Labrador does face unique challenges in terms of food access. Whenever I go to, you know, national conferences and talk about the food system that we face here, I don't think people necessarily fully appreciate just how different it is in this province. And so, you know, I do see power in those more negative stats. I see power in those in facilitating change and encouraging action. So sort of that's a bit of an aside. I think there's a real, what I've seen over the years in this work is there's an incredible resiliency in Newfoundland and Labrador. And that's a word that I've heard come up through various visioning events or activities that we've done in different communities across the province when talking about, you know, what is the vision that we want to see if we were to be implementing a number of different programs, what would the future of this community look like? And resilient is a word that keeps coming up. And so I think there's an incredible power in the people of this province and ability of people in this province to make significant change. And that's not just about food. It's about any number of things. Yeah. But that's something that I think is not necessarily felt to the same degree in other provinces and is something that is a huge strength.
Your organization has worked in Labrador, a number of projects. Just if you want to briefly talk a bit about some of those projects and how they linked in with the Indigenous communities there.
Sure. Yeah. Many years ago now, it was actually back in 2000, 2009 or 2010. We first started a partnership with the Hope Daily Inuit Community Government to work with them and support them in going through what we call a community-led food assessment process. And that's essentially a process where a community, as the title would say, where a community really drives a process of engaging people in the community in a conversation about food. And the idea is that through the process, people are spoken to and have the opportunity to identify, you know, again, what are the strengths that we have as a community, but also what are the challenges that we face or barriers that we face in terms of access to food. So back then, that first food assessment happened in Hopedale. The work of that food assessment was really driven by a locally hired coordinator and a local dynamic committee that still actually exists today, still the same group of people around that table, where they, you know, really led and defined the process that we're going to take in their community. Since that first food assessment in Hopedale, there have been additional food assessments that we've supported in Rigolet, as well as in Happy Valley Goose Bay and a couple other areas across the province. And those assessments have led to different programs now being implemented in those communities. So in Hopedale, there have been a number of different things that have been piloted over the years. They've tried and continue to do some gardening initiatives. They already had a community freezer program happening in that community, but they've expanded that community freezer program. In Rigolet, they started up a good food box program because in that community, one of the big challenges that they saw was access to store food. And so they were able to set up a partnership or a relationship with a wholesaler in Goose Bay, where they're now ordering directly from the wholesaler and then distributing a good food box program into the community when people have better access to store food. In Rigolet, they've also started up a gardening program as well. I'm certainly not the best person to talk to about all of the details of what they have happening in those communities. But what I think is most powerful about the story from those food assessments is that we've seen, and not just in those communities, we're also now working with three communities in the Coast of Bays to go through a similar process. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is that simply by talking about food and simply by bringing together the community to identify what are some of the common challenges that we face, as well as what are some of the opportunities that we see to overcome these challenges, that seemingly simple act can lead to great change and can help people see the power that they have to lead and make meaningful change in their communities.
Dan Ficken, as requested by my guest today, Christy Jameson. Let's head back to the last bit of our conversation.
Do you think things are changing in terms of what people want from food?
I do.
Yeah?
Actually, yeah, no, I do. I do. Most recently, we were actually just down in the Costa Bays a couple weeks ago. And while we were down there, I heard a couple different stories of people speaking about kids in schools asking for healthy food. And that's just that one time. But I've also, over the years, been hearing more and more and seeing more evidence of kids asking for healthy food.
Aren't they supposed to be asking for candy?
That's what adults think. Yeah, right? Like we assume
right.
that kids want these sort of less healthy options. But to me, that's a sign of change. You know, over the years, I've heard endless stories of, specifically with spinach. I don't know why it's always the spinach. But the idea of people being a part of a community garden and engaging kids in the community garden. And in the community garden, they're growing a wide variety of vegetables. And because of them being involved in actually growing these foods, they're then now going to the grocery store with their parents and asking for these foods. And so, for example, growing spinach and then going to the store and asking their parents to buy spinach because they understand it and they have a deeper connection to it now. Yeah. So there's, I think, you know, a real range of initiatives that have happened at many different levels, again, with all of these different partners that are leading to these changing tastes. Kids and I think adults too are changing in the foods that they want. And that's positive both for health. I think we're starting to see some changes within people wanting those healthier foods. But I'd also say that we are seeing changes in demand for local food and changing in demands for people wanting to know more about the food, whether it's local or not, how the food's being produced and how it's actually getting to them. And that's why we're seeing not just initiatives like farmers markets. You know, the Clarenville Farmers Market is another example of huge success. We're not just seeing these new farmers markets being created. We're also seeing change within the supermarkets. And to me, that's an indication that people are asking for and demanding for these other products.
Yeah. What's your favorite local food, Newfoundland and Labrador food? she gives me a look of fear on her face. If you had somebody from away coming to visit and they said, cook me a dinner of Newfoundland Labrador food, is there anything that you would privilege?
Are you going to give me a season?
That's a very astute question.
Yeah.
Let's say it's late September, early October.
Okay, so at that point, many things are available.
Okay, February the 1st.
Yeah, well, February would certainly be whatever I have blanched and frozen in the freezer. I do have to say I love kale because of that. I love kale because of how well it handles being blanched and then frozen, and then it can be kept in my freezer all year.
Do you think we've eaten enough kale? Are we at peak kale?
Peak kale. Yeah, probably. Okay. It does feel like we're at about that point. I do really love the greens that come out at the beginning of the spring.
Yeah.
The first sign of greens coming up, and it just the variety of things you can do with greens. In the fall, there's just such an incredible bounty of things that we can enjoy. If someone were visiting me from away and I were to be preparing them a meal, I think I'd have to do cod. And then there's just such an array of vegetables that are available at that time of year. I don't think I can pick.
It's whatever's at the market that day.
It's whatever's available. To be completely honest, I am not a successful gardener, so I support producers because I can't produce very effectively for myself. But I love to cook. So cooking is my passion when it comes to food personally. So I love taking things and using them in ways that you wouldn't necessarily think to.
Thanks so much for taking the time.
Of course, you're welcome. Anytime.
I'm encouraged immensely when people talk about resiliency, about the ability to make significant changes in the face of whatever challenges may arise. Just a note of reality here. A few weeks before this interview went to air, Christy announced that she was leaving her position at Food First and heading off to Oxford University to complete the Master in Public Policy program. It will be a big loss for us, but good leaders create an atmosphere that nurtures others to step up when it is time. That will be the case here.
Gives agency back to people that you can participate in the food system in a meaningful way simply by going out and picking some berries or starting a small garden. One of the biggest strengths that we have in terms of food and food access in the food system here are these traditional foodways. that seemingly simple act by talking about food can lead to great change and can help people see the power that they have to lead and make meaningful change in their communities.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The music for today's show was Calendula by the Newfoundland Labrador guitarist Dan Ficken. His last name is spelled F-I-C-K-E-N, so you can peruse his music at danficken.bandcamp.com. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by the Virginia banjo player Jared Church. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
There's an incredible resiliency in Newfoundland and Labrador.